Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.
This is David Prosper, host of The Leadership Revolution. Thanks for listening to the following broadcast from Public House Media.
Most of my childhood in Colorado Springs and Fountain, where you and I met. And I've been in Denver for the last few years. That's where I am now.
Awesome. And so just diving right into it, I wanted to talk to you because you've been involved in a lot of activism and you've been going to the protests. And I wanted to just discuss how that's been for you. But before we dive into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about what your life was like pre-COVID and kind of the events leading up to where we are today.
Sure. It's hard to think about pre-COVID.
I know, it feels like a fever dream.
Yeah. I was working at a restaurant in Denver. I'm an artist as well, so I was doing like some art shows and things like that. I was working on like the very day that restaurants were told that they were going to be shut down, so that was a very intense and strange day at work. Just over the last few months of being unemployed, just up until the other day, I finally got a job. I've just been doing a lot of activism work with DSA and some other organizations.
Do you think that because you were laid off, it kind of gave you more space to jump into the realm of activism, or is it something that you've always kind of been involved with?
It definitely helped a lot to just give me like the time to be able to really devote to it. And I was able to get onto unemployment after about like a month or so. So being able to pay my bills and not have to like worry about that and just being able to focus on it. Like, I've gotten so much done. It's crazy. It's always things that I've always been passionate about, but never had the time to like really, really commit to.
Right. What inspired you the most to get involved with the various issues that we're facing right now?
I think like a lot of people, I saw what happened to George Floyd, and that really sparked something that, you know, has always kind of been in the background as something that I know, you know, these injustices happen all the time. But I think that perfect storm of having, you know, not having a job, being able to really like sit with the pain and allow that to kind of like fuel me. And then, it's just kind of, while it is still like centered around that, I think the movement has really grown because people are seeing how much like capitalism is really kind of like the root of so many of our problems right now. And just kind of like how so many things go back to that, and that's like really what a lot of us are fighting against, I think.
Right, yeah. And I think this time really highlights how interconnected every issue we're facing is, I think.
It's really connected, and I think like with COVID showing people you know, what it's like to not have like good medical care and then having their jobs taken away for no reason and not being able to pay for said medical care, having to risk their lives to go, like, all of it is, yeah, just so intertwined.
Yeah, and it's one of those points in history, I think, where it's almost the perfect storm because all of these things are happening simultaneously, and at the same time we have this huge population of people who are unemployed suddenly. So I've heard a lot of people online talking about how that the mass of people that kind of just had their whole lives turned upside down was a big catalyst for this. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. Yeah. I think everyone was already so upset and so frustrated with the state of things, and then just adding one more horrible thing onto it, it just finally hit that breaking point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has been a wild ride to see, and I think that it's definitely a historic time. I kind of come to every once in a while and I'm just like, wow, we are really living through this. This is really happening.
It's hard to believe sometimes.
It really, really, truly is. So let's talk a little bit about how you initially got involved. What was your first experience with activism?
Like most recently or like lifetime?
You can start with your lifetime and then just dive into the recently.
Okay. Yeah, I have been having some conversations lately with people just talking about like what radicalized you when you were younger. And like a lot of different things. I mean, I was always really passionate about like environmental activism when I was younger. And that used to be where my focus was. But then I also, you know, I thought about like the food injustice that I saw in our school systems and like having all of my friends on free and reduced lunch and like seeing like those kinds of things play out, I think were kind of like subtle things that like I knew on some level were wrong, but I didn't know what to do about yet. So just a lot of that, like building over time, witnessing a lot of things from my friends being oppressed and like my own experiences with some of that stuff. And then more recently, I got involved with the Denver chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, back in April, I want to say, after being laid off from my restaurant job in Denver. I had kind of been talking with some coworkers and we were trying to figure out, you know, how to navigate all of that. And most of us didn't have jobs, but we knew like at some point they might ask us to go back to work. And if that's the case, like, how do we advocate for our safety? None of us had experience with this and, you know, restaurants are very rarely unionized. So it was kind of hard to like find those resources at first, but then we got in touch with DSA and they helped us so much with like drafting letters to management and like figuring out, you know, like how the escalation process works, all of these kind of organizing things that I had never even like heard of. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my introduction. And then, you know, that's like one tiny facet of what DSA does. There's all these different committees and things for different issues. So I got brought in with the labor committee, but then I've also been working with like the housing justice committee. We started a new working group specifically for direct action work. And I helped with that along with a few other members, to make sure that everyone is like protesting safely and has, you know, the gear, that they need, the knowledge that they need, all of those kinds of things. So yeah, it's just really, it just has kind of spread. And since I've had all this free time, it's like anytime someone needs something, I'm just like, hey, hi, I have time. Let me do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been good.
What exactly is direct action? Could you like give us a quick definition of that?
Yeah, it's kind of just any... Oh, that's sort of hard to define to me because it's so broad. Like it can be protesting is what a lot of people think of, but also to use another example, like we do jail support here, like that's a direct action. going and like doing eviction defense for tenants to like help, you know, prevent them from being kicked out, making calls to senators, congresspeople, just anything where you are, you know, taking that time to act in some way for whatever cause, I guess.
Gotcha, gotcha.
We like to say direct action gets the goods.
Nice, I like that. Very quick and to the point. So, what has your experience been going out on the streets and being involved in the protests in Denver?
It has, honestly, I feel like it's changed over the last week. You know, it's a lot of the things are still similar. You know, we're chanting, we're still demanding the same things because a lot of our demands haven't been met. A few of them have, which is cool. You know, we've had some wins and I think it's important to focus on those, but, it has gotten more violent recently. And, I actually wasn't here for the very first weekend of protests. I was still out of town. So that first weekend when a lot of people in Denver, you know, were tear gassed and shot with rubber bullets and all of that, I missed that weekend. So to me, like everything afterward was pretty peaceful, you know, lots of gatherings and marching and everything. It's been really great to see everyone be super cautious about COVID. Like there's almost no one without a mask on. There's always people walking around just like handing out hand sanitizer and and masks and everything. So everyone has been really safe, which is good. But yeah, the last week has gotten like pretty intense. And we've had a lot of discussions around safety and also like emotional, you know, how do we process these traumatic events in a way that allows for like longevity of the movement too.
Right. That's super important.
Yeah.
That kind of leads me into my next question. What has been the scariest part about being involved as closely as you have been?
I think, you know, after Saturday, the events in Aurora, I just kind of had a realization that like, there are people who do want us dead. And I think it was kind of like a really eye-opening moment for me because like as a white person in this country, I haven't experienced that kind of like targeted violence in that way. I am like a female presenting person, so that brings some things, but definitely not to that level. You know, I've heard gunshots nearby. I've never had gunshots like where I thought they were pointed at me. So it's been really scary just to realize like this is, you know, it's a very, very serious struggle that we're in and we are going to lose people over the course of this revolution. And, you know, that is hard and scary. And where do you figure out like your own boundaries and what you're comfortable with? So, yeah.
Would you be okay with talking a little bit more about what happened on Saturday?
Yeah, sure. So, for anyone who hasn't heard about it, there was a protest that started at the Aurora Municipal Center. We've had a couple protests out there demanding action for Elijah McClain, who was murdered by cops almost a year ago, which was, if you don't know anything about that case, definitely look into it. It's super, super messed up. So, you know, it kind of seemed like a normal protest in the beginning. We always kind of bring extra gear for Aurora because they are, they've always notoriously been one of the most brutal police departments in the country. They have a really, really high rate of like violence and things like that. So, and they also they aren't covered under some of the mandates that Denver had against using tear gas. Although that seems to be out the window anyway. But they're just, you know, it's like going to Aurora, you expect more violence. So we were a little bit more prepared. We have a really good system that we do with DSA to like keep people in groups where we're, you know, checking in on each other, keeping tabs. I was like a leader of, we call them pods. So as a pod lead, which means I'm like really supposed to be keeping eyes on everybody. So we had marched onto the highway from the precinct, onto I-225. We had a little bit of a car blockade, as well as, the wall of moms were at the back, and I was kind of up towards like the middle of things when we were stopped, hearing from some speakers. And, yeah, it happened so fast. I had a radio. So each of our leaders all had a radio, as well as like some other people walking around to help keep tabs on things. And I heard all this noise on the radio and like people screaming. So I start looking around trying to figure out like what's going on. And then just all of a sudden I start seeing like people running, and, I heard the engine of the Jeep like revving. So we just ran to the side of the highway and all kind of like huddled against the little concrete thing right there. A woman not too far away jumped over the barrier, which was probably like a 20 or 30 foot drop. So we were trying to figure out like how to help her. People were screaming for medics, and it was just like pure chaos. Like we heard the gunshots, and most of us, I think, were first thinking like, oh, someone is shooting at us, you know, before we realized what the situation was. There was another car that drove through after the Jeep, which I don't think a lot of people realize. And then like we kind of linked arms and ran across to the other side of the highway. And when we did that, a couple of the people in my group got separated, which was really scary. So one of them linked back up with us, but then we were still missing one person and just trying to figure out, you know, do we stop? Do we keep going? We decided to keep moving and just try to meet up with her later just for like group safety, which was a really, really hard decision to make. And we ended up finding her and it was fine and none of our people were injured. But yeah, that was all super scary. The march kind of gathered back up after a few minutes. And they kind of announced what happened, which was, a very intense moment. We marched back to the precinct and we were all, you know, like I put on my mask and goggles as we were marching back, because I was like, they're going to be waiting for us, ready to, you know, ready to pounce, whatever. I don't know. I've just never had an experience like that, like feeling so trapped, being up there on the highway with like nowhere to go and all of this danger and chaos and terror from the people around me. It was very intense. And we ended up not staying very long. We all got back to the municipal center, and decided to just go home, 'cause it was quite a day, but I know some people did stay later that night too.
Yeah, wow, that is just insanity. It's just like really, really scary. I couldn't believe that happened right, you know, just an hour south of me.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how scary that must have been being there.
Yeah, it's still hard to believe it. I think the videos too, just like, they really don't capture what it felt like on the ground, you know. It's
right. And I don't think it got the beginning of that whole exchange either.
Right.
At least the videos I've seen, you can't really see whenever the Jeep starts to accelerate and, you know, the truck getting in the way of the Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like very real in that moment to see something like that happen to people that you know and in a place that you're familiar with. Because you always hear stories like that, but to actually see it and to know people that were there, that's just, it makes it a lot more real. I know it's always real, but it gives it that much more substance, I guess.
Yeah.
I am happy that you're safe. I'm happy that for the most part, everybody was able to make it out of there. But yeah, thanks for sharing that a little bit.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I'll say too, that truck absolutely saved lives. If he hadn't made that quick decision, then you know, people absolutely would have been hit by the Jeep. So we're super, super grateful for him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I was wondering if you could shed some light on misconceptions people might have about these protests and the protesters involved in them.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, especially after something like that happens, there's a lot of misinformation that's spread and a lot of, like, you know, like quick judgments and things, which is always hard to deal with. I have a lot of family members who completely disagree with what I'm doing and I think really kind of look down on the decisions that I've been making. But we're fighting for what we believe in, and to us it's just like valuing human life at the end of the day and like having compassion for other people, seeing other people as our equals, and truly believing that they are just as deserving of, you know, dignity and respect, as well as like basic needs. Like I believe that everyone should have housing and healthcare and all of these things. And, you know, it's just crazy to me that people are debating if Black lives matter. Like what, you know, to me, it's just like, how do you even have any ill feelings about protesters right now? Like we're just trying to show, you know, the violence that has happened against Black, Indigenous, and other people of color for, I mean, you know, since this country was founded, it's been nothing but violence and oppression against those people. And I don't know how people continue to try to argue against that. And, you know, a lot of people get upset about, oh, you're destroying property. And it's just, you know, property is not equal to life. And if some buildings get graffitied, okay, you know, to me, like, whatever.
Yeah.
If we're helping to change the number of people that are killed every year, you know, that's what matters.
Right. I wanted to touch back on your family and the differing of opinions there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, I don't know, words of advice on what somebody can do in that situation, like whenever they have a certain belief and their family has the complete opposite belief?
Honestly, I'm still figuring that out myself, but, you know, I did try, like, there was one family member who engaged with me over Facebook and it got really heated, and I really tried to, like, keep it a calm interaction. And I think it was a lesson in, like, just don't even try over the internet, you know, if you, yeah. Most of my side of the family that has those beliefs are back on the East Coast. So I can't go and sit and have a conversation with them, which I think would be the best thing, because, you know, you're just more likely to be understanding and compassionate and empathetic if you are in the room with someone. And of course, COVID is also a thing still. So
right, yes.
Second best thing is maybe a phone call and just, you know, just reaching out and trying to keep it away from just like arguing about stuff, but just, you know, sharing your thoughts and your feelings and hearing them out as well, you know, asking those why questions. Why do you believe this? Why, you know, I don't know. Why questions I think are huge, and just like feeling statements, letting them know how their actions might make you feel, and keeping it away from like blame statements. Because you don't want them to go on the defense if you want to have like a productive conversation.
Yeah.
So
it can be really difficult. It's something that I've definitely had to face myself with my own family. So it's just, I think a lot of people can relate to that, because for me, like I love my family. I love, you know, I love them so much, but it's just like at the same time I have these completely different opinions. Mm-hmm. So it can be very difficult to navigate that, and also, you know, try to have that productive conversation at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope to work. I mean, to be honest, I haven't talked to my dad in, like, I don't know, like 3 months now. And I think especially after Saturday, like really having that, you know, like I could have died today. And I haven't, you know, I haven't spoken to him. I haven't tried to have that conversation because I think I'm just so anxious about it. And I don't know, you know, how to even start. So, you know, I really need to heed my own advice here and work on that at some point.
Yeah, it's definitely easier said than done.
Yeah, for sure.
And especially fresh off of something like what you experienced, I can imagine it's going to take a little bit of time to work your way up to that.
Yeah.
So moving on a little bit, what do you think somebody who might not have gotten involved yet, what do you think the first steps for them would be that want to get involved?
Yeah, I think taking a little bit of time to just like just sit with like some of those feelings and ask yourself, like, why do I want to be involved? Like, what's my motivation? What is my comfort level? Because I think a big thing that I'm trying to talk to people about right now too is like not everyone has to be, you know, on the front lines of a protest. You know, that's kind of like the dramatic news headline kind of thing, but there's so much like back end work that needs to be done. There's so many phone calls to be made. You know, we have members of the DSA that are immunocompromised and they really can't leave home very much, but there's so much work to be done in all areas. So just figuring out, you know, where your passions are as well as your skills and kind of finding that overlap of like, what am I comfortable doing? What am I going to be really good at doing? And how can I best serve my community and what, you know, what does my community need that I can provide?
Right. That is great advice. So what is next for you? What is on the horizon?
So many things. I do start work next week, which I am very grateful to have a job, but also a little bit terrified to be jumping back into 40 hours a week because I have like a million organizing things to do on my to-do list. So I don't know. We had a little run-in yesterday with state troopers coming in and sweeping the camp that was in front of the Capitol, which was a whole other traumatic, difficult day. But just kind of a reminder, like there's still a lot of housing justice work to be done right now. We need to be supporting our unhoused community and figuring out all of that stuff, which kind of ties into like the COVID defense. We're still trying to cancel rent and get those eviction moratoriums extended. And all of those things. We have a new abolition working group in DSA that's doing like a ton of super awesome work because that's really, at the end of the day, that's kind of like the long-term goal. Abolishing the police, abolishing prisons, abolishing ICE. They all go hand in hand, and it's like, it's such a big, big issue that's very ingrained. So that as a brand new group has a lot of great things that they're doing, but a lot of like figuring out to do, you know, still protesting when I can between work and just educating too. I'm trying to make sure that I'm spending time at home, you know, reading books, listening to podcasts, all of those things so that, you know, I'm continuing to educate myself through all of this as well.
Yeah, right. So could I actually backtrack? I wanted to ask you, I think that there's a lot of confusion and, I don't know, misinformation around the abolition, work and that kind of, push. Could you just give me a quick Cliff Notes version of that and like why that would be beneficial?
I can try. It definitely,
okay. It's very complex.
It is. I definitely encourage people to look into it for themselves more, but, I think, it's, again, it's a really long-term thing. So a lot of people, I think, have these, you know, they're like, what are you going to do with the murders right now? And it's like, honestly, that's not even a concern at the moment. Because it's about, you know, first starting with defunding the police, cutting those budgets, cutting the staff, and redirecting those resources to other programs, you know, public health things, mental health resources, you know, food security, all of those community needs, because at the end of the day, a lot of crime comes back to people who can't access those basic needs, people stealing food or, you know, breaking into a house, like things like that, that if their needs were met, you know, we would see a huge reduction in crime. And also on another side of it is like, we put too much on the cops right now. Like anytime something is bad that we don't know how to handle, it's like, okay, call the police. But a lot of the times, you know, they really aren't trained to help in a lot of situations. So they end up, you know, just not really being able to assist people in the way that they need. So there's a lot of great, I just saw one for Colorado Springs. Denver has one. A lot of cities have these sheets that will tell you alternatives to 911 to call. So like funding those programs more, and then, you know, releasing people, starting with, you know, a big one in Colorado is like marijuana crimes, which people, I think if I remember right, it's in October, they might, or sometime soon, they're going to start releasing those people, elderly and immunocompromised, especially considering the pandemic that we're still in, you know, people who are locked up for nonviolent crimes, who really aren't any threat to society, should just be released, and we should start working on those programs for rehabilitation, as well as like restorative justice options, so we can start working on alternatives to incarceration. I don't feel like that was a good Cliff Notes version, because again, it is such a big issue, but yeah, those are just a few things, I guess.
Gotcha. So basically it's a scaling down, and it's a reevaluation of what we deem a defense that should get you locked away for the rest of your life, essentially.
Yeah, and just working towards those alternatives.
Gotcha. Cool. Thank you so much for that, because it's a huge undertaking. It's a huge goal. And I think that if people really took a second to look at it for what it was and not what it might seem to be on a surface level, a lot more people would be on board.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think we have a really great petition out right now, and a lot of people like read the headline of it, because it just says defund APD and DPD, Aurora and Denver Police Departments. And a lot of people are like, you know, like they react very strongly to that. But then when we encourage them to read through the entire, because it's a pretty long petition that really explains a lot of these things. And I've seen a few people say like, oh, okay, sorry, I read it, and now I'm actually on board with it. So I do think there's a lot of merit to that. Like taking the time to research these things for yourself and figure out, you know, like, are you having an emotional reaction just to those words? Or might you actually, you know, agree with some of these things?
Right. All right. So that is pretty much all I had for you. Do you have anything that you'd like to shout out, or would you like to share where people might be able to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. My website has a resource list that I try to keep pretty up to date if people are just looking for any number of different things as far as getting involved and getting more informed. So I'm on Instagram as indigo_Elise. My website is fromelise.com. Yeah, I don't know. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I'm totally happy to connect people in Denver or wherever else with the DSA, for one, is a really awesome organization to get involved in, and they're all over the U.S. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Elise. I really appreciate you hopping on the pod today.
Yeah, thank you.
thank you so much for listening to another episode of Stories from Planet Earth. If you have some time, leave us a review and be sure to subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts. Find us on Instagram at SFPE Podcasts. I'll talk to you next week.
When you place a wager with William Hill Sportsbook, every sports moment becomes even more interesting. And we have a special 2021 offer to help you bet on all your favorite sports risk-free. Download the William Hill mobile app. And when you sign up, you can get started with a risk-free bet of up to $2,021. Use promo code RADIORF. Must be present in Virginia. 21 plus only. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat our confidential and toll-free helpline at 1-888-532-3500. Let's make it interesting. With William Hill Sportsbook.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's, actually Geico's.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico because they helped save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.